Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy mid-January, everybody. I'm waiting till the last time possible to record today's intro, literally cutting it close to make it on time for Tuesday. It's because I'm hoping I can announce my second kid in time, but nope, still waiting. I'm on the edge of the seat, and baby Maggie should be here soon. I'm also excited to announce I'll be putting the Global from Asia podcast back to every week instead of every other week. I was a little bit behind, and now I got tons of awesome interviews just ready to go, and people really enjoying them. I had a meetup in our third meetup in the Hong Kong office last week, and Chris from Zhuhai said he was losing track of the shows because it wasn't every week, so he wouldn't check and then he wouldn't see it. And others have mentioned too they're losing track and they want more. So let's give it to you guys, and we're going to be having more interviews. A lot of times now talking about Amazon selling from Asia. Seems to be the hottest trend everywhere, so it's going to be a focus, so hope you guys can keep up. Also, on the cross-border summit news, I've partnered up with Wilson Blues. He was one of our hotter podcast interviews. He's our Chinese Amazon seller pro, and he's going to be helping me with the cross-border summit on April 16th. He's going to help with some venue confirmations and sponsors and Chinese attendees and speakers. So definitely, if you haven't gotten your tickets already, we're selling some early birds already. I'm really excited. We're still 3 months away, and people are doing it. I wouldn't actually expect early birds to even sell. So definitely seems like people are interested. So make sure you lock in that ticket, and it's right during a Canton Fair and a Global Sources Fair. So hopefully you can find time to come. All right, enough of the chit-chat. This week, we have Manuel from ImportDojo.com, and he's giving some tips and tricks for electronic sourcing in China. It was a pretty insightful interview, and even I learned some things I wish I had known many years ago. So let's listen in. So thank you, everybody, for tuning into another Global from Asia podcast. We are here in the Hong Kong office with a special guest, Manuel Bakvar.
That's right. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm hoping I said your name right. It's great to have you on the show. So do you mind introducing yourself to everybody?
Yeah, sure. The name is Manuel. I'm born Austrian, but I moved to Hong Kong in 2005 to work as an intern for a buying company, a buying office actually for a retailer in Europe. And I haven't left since. Been in the retail and buying industry for about 17 years. And just recently, early last year, I started my own company, a consumer electronics trading company. But I also started a blog on importing from China and teaching people to sell online, specifically for Amazon, FBA. And I do a lot of sourcing also for these clients. That's what I'm up to these days.
Great to have you on the show. So, yeah, we've had topics about like Kickstarter, Amazon, and of course, sourcing in China. And I also talked to a lot of different listeners here, and there's still, I think, maybe I want to focus on today. We find the products, but I think that the challenge is not just really finding them, but the details afterwards of the sampling and then the ongoing relationship management. So what do you usually tell someone that maybe they have a product they already want to sell? You do electronics, let's go back in time, maybe iPod, some kind of iPod accessories, like or iPhone cases or something. And they want to maybe find something out of these thousands of results on maybe Alibaba, Global Sources. What's maybe the first kind of step they should do?
Okay, Alibaba for me is not my first source where I go to, but I realize that lots of people go on Alibaba or Global Sources. For me, I try to meet every supplier. So I usually meet suppliers at the shows, exhibitions, or I know them through contacts. But having said that, I know it's difficult when you're overseas. So let's say you go on Alibaba and you're looking for a product. So the first thing you do is you basically vet a supplier from A to Z. You check his business registrations, you ask him for his company profile, who does he work with, what is his turnover, what kind of certification he has for certain product categories. And it's really all about finding a trustworthy supplier. And if you have the feeling that when you're communicating with the supplier, and it's difficult, or he's not really eager to do business, or maybe you're a small-time buyer, he's maybe not interested that much. So I'd definitely say go on, move on to the next supplier. And it's really about building relationships with suppliers and finding trustworthy suppliers. I could go on a hourly,
it's a huge topic.
But I do provide a free ebook on my site. I think you can mention it also. And I think in there, there's a 65 pages free book that are basic stages that everyone should go through. There's also a video on scanning Alibaba and how to vet trustworthy suppliers. So I'll definitely recommend your listeners to check it out.
Yeah, well, we'll link that up on the show notes. So I'm thinking of some specific questions, like they get the samples, and maybe they're in the U.S. and they paid the $100 UPS fee to ship the samples over, and the sample doesn't work. So I guess obviously just scratch that supplier right off the top, right? I mean, is there any hope there? Or?
There's always a possibility that the item could be broken through transport. But having said that, if it's very obvious that the sample didn't work in the first place, then try to pay for samples via PayPal. So you can at least initiate a chargeback or a dispute with PayPal to get your money back there. And if it's obvious that it was the supplier's fault and he didn't really send you a proper sample in the first place, definitely move on to the next supplier. I mean, a lot of buyers, they stop the process when they hear about a $100 charge for a sample. But I mean, it's a business and you have to treat it as a business. So it's normal to pay for samples. A lot of suppliers ask for a very high amount when they send samples. The main reason for that is they're afraid that you just want a sample, you know, and maybe sell the sample. And many buyers do not come back after the suppliers send the samples for free, maybe. So it's fair to say that they charge for samples. And if the sample is fine and you eventually place an order with the supplier, you could always ask the supplier to refund you the sample costs. I mean, not many buyers do that either. So you can get at least back the $100 sample order, sample amount. But yeah, I definitely also recommend to not just go with one supplier, but order samples from at least two or three suppliers and then check, and based on the communication and the understanding you have with the supplier, decide on that later.
Cool. And then especially in the consumer electronics, it's such a fast-paced, fast-moving industry. How do you really keep on top of the changes in the market? Like with the samples and the quality, by the time you get it and go back and forth multiple times, must be hard. Is there any tips to keep in top, or I mean, maybe focus on one product?
Definitely focus on one category of electronic products. You're right. It's a very fast-paced category, especially Bluetooth and Wi-Fi enabled products. They change in technology all the time. Software, firmware gets updated from, I don't know, Apple or Android. So yeah, it's difficult to stay ahead. What I do is I check a lot of tech blogs like TechCrunch or Mashable, Engadget, and I try to keep ahead of trends and see if my suppliers know anything about these, let's say, new technologies already. I also ask suppliers to keep me updated on like a bi-weekly basis to send me new product ideas. It's interesting that you need to push your suppliers to offer you new stuff. You know, I don't know, if you work with a European supplier, they probably send you new material every other week, you know, but this is something you have to really teach the suppliers in China to send you the latest developments so that you can also stay ahead of competition.
Definitely a good tip. And then that would be maybe probably by email, or I mean, I guess it depends on the supplier or what you prefer. Or
I usually ask them to send me an email with a couple of new designs, even if they haven't finalized a product yet and they are in the initial development stages. I'll just ask them to, you know, send me the 3D rendering or a drawing that you have, and then I'll boost that out to my 500 people on my mailing list and ask them for feedback, what they think, you know, so I can give feedback to the supplier as well. And then they either move on with the product or not. Yeah, and sometimes I'm able to go to the factories, so I go visit the showrooms and see if they have anything new there.
Yeah, I mean, that's I think our, well, your advantage of being here, right, is being on the ground on this side of the earth is a huge advantage. So maybe you can give some examples of maybe how you would visit a factory and at what point do you visit them? I mean, I guess you were going to trade shows and you're networking. At what point do you invest in traveling to that factory?
That's a very good question. I usually don't place an order before I haven't visited the factory, or I let someone audit the factory, like a third party inspection company. The way I go with it, it's usually I have a lot of communication before I go visit the factory. And if I really like the product and I don't want to do an audit, because maybe it's in Shenzhen, so it's just like a, you know, 1 hour trip for me. So yeah, I'll go directly to the factory. I ask them to pick me up at the train station. Then you get to the factory. It's very important that you also say, okay, what time do you guys have lunch? Because maybe you sit first in the showroom and then you discuss and then it's discuss and then you want to see the manufacturing. And then they're like, oh, sorry, we're out for lunch. So maybe sometimes it's best when you come during the day to ask what times are the lunch breaks. So maybe you go see the production facilities first. And then you sit down to discuss. Anyway, and then once you see in the factory, the production process, you go sit down for a meeting, you introduce yourself, you ask who are the customers, you make conversation, you know, and then you also ask them questions like, where do you see yourself in the next couple of years? What are your developments? Where are you heading to with your products and which markets are you looking for? And I have a checklist that I go through when I go through the production to see if they have social compliance with their workers. You know, do they have access to fresh water, or in general, if the conditions are good in the factory. And after the meeting, I usually decide to go with the factory or not.
You have me chuckling when you're talking about the lunch. I always think of meals with factories, and maybe, I don't know, sometimes at lunchtime, but of course there's the famous Baijiu liquor, or the, you know, cigarette smoking and the partying and any of that, or is that tamed down over the years? I haven't been involved personally in this for my own business for quite a few years, so
not yet. I mean, I haven't been to any drinking contest in a factory, but it's quite common that they offer you tea and maybe cigarettes, and sometimes they just want to sit and smoke and discuss. But, you know, I'm usually come in a suit, in a business suit. I try to look very professional. That's how I learned it, through the retailer, you know. Mm. You have to be very strict, very straightforward, get to the point what you need. Because sometimes I visit 3 to 4 factories a day, so I don't really have time for Chinese drinking festivities, even if I would want to sometimes. But once in a while, there is a dinner where you can have a couple of drinks with the supplier. But it's not that common anymore.
Let's leave it at that. Awesome. So how about relationship management? So you've found the ideal supplier and you're getting a week, maybe every other week, some updates of new products. And is there some tips to keep them happy or make them, you know, want to keep doing business with you? Or
yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a good relationship with the supplier is the key to this business. If I work with a supplier and he supports me, let's say in terms of pricing or in terms of quality or whatever, you know, I try to help him as well. I see it has to be on both sides. So sometimes when I have an issue with a production, but maybe the buyer didn't give proper instructions, I don't blame the supplier, you know. But on the other hand, I also try to be on the buyer's side. So I always find a way to comfort both parties. And because I may still want to order from that factory for a different client, so I don't want them to be upset with me. There has to be mutual respect. And I think you have to work on that with your supplier. Doesn't mean you have to call him every week and ask how's it going and how's the weather in China. We all know how's the weather in China. But it should be mutually beneficial and respect each other.
So how about some tips on making a purchase order? Is there anything with terms that you recommend? I know this is your specialty and the service you provide, so I know there's probably some top secrets here, but I think a lot of times people are afraid, like, how do I protect myself if they're late or if the quality's not good? Or, of course, there's so many different tips probably in that contract, but maybe just some giveaways for some desperate people.
I do have a standard contract that I send to the supplier once I place the order, and I'm not transferring any money before he hasn't signed that contract. I will give away a few details, but first, even if I do send a contract and the supplier does not always agree to all terms, sometimes they just cross out what they don't like in the contract. And if it's okay with me, also I will probably just agree on crossing out a few things. My main, not trick, but my key focus on the contract is usually regarding penalties and inspection costs and quality issues. So let's say, for example, the order is 15 days late. I usually give them like a 7-day to 10-day window. And anything above that, I will give them, I will ask them to pay a penalty like 2% if it's over 10 days, 5% if it's over 17 days, and so on. Another thing is re-inspection. So I usually don't have any production going out without inspection. Let's say the inspection is failed. I will ask the supplier to re-inspect or to rework the goods and then re-inspect, but he has to pay the re-inspection costs. And that is also agreed on before I place the order with the factory. So that's somehow some, those are the two main insurances that you should have, the inspection and the penalty. Even though I don't always enforce the penalty, I always enforce the re-inspection costs, for example.
So we were talking a little bit before the show, and in your bio, you mentioned you work with really big retailers, and you've also worked with maybe some small, medium-sized enterprises. I'm sure there must be differences, or is it pretty much the same process, or maybe you can give some both sides of the coin here.
So in my previous job, I used to work as a product manager for a large German retailer in the excess of $50 billion per year. And those guys work completely different than the people I work with right now. They come to Asia twice, three times a year. They go to factories, they go to exhibitions. They sample a product like 3-4 times. They sample from many different factories, not just two. They're very tough on negotiating. So there's really, it goes down to the cent that they want to renegotiate prices. And they're not easy always, you know. They put a lot of pressure on you also if there is any issue on the quality or even later on in the store, you know. Retailers often are subject to media reports like this product has to be withdrawn from the market because of issues on, let's say, electrical issues. And then they come with $1 million claims to the factories. And that is that you have to negotiate as a product manager with the factories. And then you have the small to medium sized enterprises like that I work with now, like Amazon sellers or small importers in Europe or even in the US. They're a lot more easygoing. Sampling does not take so long. Decisions are made a lot faster than retailers. I mean, retailers, some projects last longer than a year before they make a decision because there are so many hierarchy levels and decision makers. And when you work with Amazon sellers and importers, it's just one decision maker, really, which makes it a lot easier to work with. And well, the quantities are definitely smaller. The risk is less also with most of them. And but I feel that working with these sellers and importers, it's much more fulfilling for me as a company owner, because, you know, when you negotiate a discount for like $500, they really appreciate it. Then they clap you on the back and like, hey, job well done. And if you work for a retailer, it's like, yeah, okay, so that's your job anyway, right? Or they even complain if you don't get a discount. So I prefer working with the smaller companies, but working with the big guys has helped me a lot on structuring my work and to learn about the processes. And that's why I have so much background knowledge about this manufacturing industry in China.
One for the small guys. That's great. We got something in common here. But do the small guys have much to negotiate with? I'm sure these factories prefer to do business with a retailer, you think? Or do they like Amazon sellers or smaller buyers? Or
the factories actually prefer to work with people who are less complicated. Like if you're an Amazon seller, you probably don't need certification. I mean, you do need certification, but retailers come and say, okay, we need GS report, CE report, we need ROSE testing, REACH testing, and that goes into the thousands of dollars. I mean, obviously then the quantity is really large and the suppliers are willing to invest into the testing costs. When you work with Amazon sellers or smaller importers, the quantities are lower, but the headache is smaller and the investment costs for the factory is also lower. But yeah, it can be when you're a factory and you work with a big retailer for many years, it definitely is a lot more attractive to work with a retailer in terms of profit and gross margin. Yeah.
But let's keep helping the small guys, right? Yeah. I think there are our friends, and like you said, you can help. They feel the help a lot more, and they're much more appreciative. So cool. I mean, I think this was a really good sharing session. And I'm just still like, because I talk to some of the listeners. I don't provide the sourcing service myself, but I still, you know, enjoy hearing from some people that are struggling. And I don't want to name names, but there's one that specifically, you know, maybe you can help him, but he's it's not electronic. It's more like a traditional product, more niche. So he keeps getting the sample. He has a limited amount of factories. There's not as many as like Bluetooth factories, but he's trying to he's only got a few factories and the samples keep coming out bad. And I don't think it's the shipping, but the factory says it's good. And I talked to him last week. Maybe, you know, I think I will introduce you actually. But he doesn't know what to do because he says his competitors. He's new. He's a new buyer. You know, Amazon, and he just doesn't know what to do because he assumes that his competitors are getting it from these factories, but the samples keep coming out bad. So I don't. Maybe it's got to be made in China, but I don't know. I'm probably not clear enough to give you an answer. You know, you can give an answer, but any ideas?
Well, if he has really a couple of factories and the quality is bad overall, I would look for a new product. I mean, first of all, I would look at the reviews on Amazon of the competition, and maybe they have the same issues, or maybe customers report the same issues. You know, if not, and you still get bad quality from different factories, then it's probably the product that it doesn't really work well in its core components or technology. I'd probably look into something else. If it's a Bluetooth item, like you said, I'd also be careful with Bluetooth licenses that you have to pay. If you're not a Bluetooth interest group member, there are huge fees unless you take the factory's brand. But I think if he's on Amazon, he probably wants to sell private label. So if you private label a Bluetooth product, you have to pay $8,000 fee to Bluetooth for the chip, for the Bluetooth license. So these are not really products I'd recommend anyway for a beginner. If you said he's starting, then if he's not buying a couple thousand pieces, then stay away from these kind of products anyway. Yeah.
So it's been great to have you on the show. I know you mentioned some of your ebooks and ways they can find you. Maybe you can give another way here.
I have a blog called importdojo.com where I give away my beginner's book. That's a 65-page ebook. I also have it on Amazon. You can give me a review there if you like. But I also have, I wrote three more books, two more focusing on the manufacturing part in China and actually going to China and how to behave and how to act at factories and exhibitions. And then I've written one more book that's focusing on FBA. These books are available on the website or on Amazon. And they also, there's also a course with like 12 hours of video tutorials. Feel free to check it out. There's a lot of free stuff also on the blog. Be happy to help anyone who's interested.
Thanks so much for coming on. And we'll have to get you back in the future.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you, Manuel, for sharing. And I wish this podcast was really around when I was sourcing back in the 2007, 2008 days. I'm getting old, I guess. But if you did enjoy it, please send him a note and thank him and let him know, or even buy some services from him. He's a great guy, and it was good to know him and get him on the show. Also, a friend and listener, Arash, in the US, San Francisco, was loving the show, and he's trying to leave me an iTunes review, and he said he has some technical issues. I'm not sure if that's just a nice excuse to get around leaving me a review or not, but I hate begging, but I haven't gotten one since November, and I'm starving for one. If you guys would do it, appreciate it. Every review counts for the Apple iTunes gods. We're told in the podcast circles that more reviews means more people to find us, so takes a few minutes to do it, and I would really appreciate it. Next week, we're going to have Rosemary Coates talking about reshoring manufacturing over to America, a bit of inverse of what we're talking about today, and it's sometimes good to get some different perspectives, so hope you guys like it, and catch you next week. Maybe baby Maggie will be with us too. Alrighty, take care, guys. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.